This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Watley on KLZ 560.
Welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for being with us. We're going to be playing for you here these next few weeks some segments from a show that I have the privilege of doing in Dallas with a doctor, Dr. Lewis Coates. And he has a family medical practice there in the Dallas area. And he just brings some great information, and I wanted to share it with our Haystack audience here as well. So again, he is not a local doctor. He's out of the Garland, Texas area, but just great health information. So we're going to join that conversation now with Dr. Lewis Coates. Dr. Coates, great to have you back, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. You bet. Man, I know you guys have been busy, and always dealing with all the different medical conditions. And, man, that's why I love doing this show, because each week we can generally hit a lot of new topics that you deal with. And as I was discussing with you last night, man, I thought today would be a good one to kind of talk about, because I think we hear it every day. If you work with even a few people, or somebody will say, oh, I sprained my ankle, or I pulled a muscle, or I strained my neck, and all those kind of terms. I thought we'd kind of talk about that a little bit. But so first of all, let's just talk about and usually when people talk about a sprain, it, you know, most of the time it's an ankle a lot of the times, but it can be a wrist, whatever, and knee, I guess, too. But when we sprain something, what really happened?
Well, most of the time when you sprain something, you twisted it enough that you stretched some of the ligaments that hold it in place, and it's gone further one direction than it's supposed to go. Typically, when it's a sprain, the ligaments are intact and they're not completely torn, so they'll heal up just fine on their own. Basically, where it's been stretched will just fill in with some scar tissue over time, and that will heal. It still hurts, you know. Unfortunately, you know, the way our body's made is when something's damaged, inflammatory cells immediately go in there. That's what the swelling is that you see, and they start trying to repair the damaged tissue.
Right. So the ligaments, I mean, first of all, there's a whole lot going on in our feet, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I tell you, I've had shots about everywhere, and man, the most painful has ever been in my foot. Wow, a lot of nerves there. But, I mean, there's a ton of ligaments around there, so is it – and best you can over radio, describe kind of how the foot's made. Are there several main ligaments or a bunch of tiny ligaments around the ankle? What's it look like in there?
Well, you've got a combination of large ligaments and small ligaments. The large ones mainly keep it from going the left and right, so it stays straight when you're walking and it doesn't bend sideways. And then you've got a whole bunch of smaller ligaments that keep the bones in place and keep it from moving, shifting different directions. Now, you were talking about how the foot hurts, and that's actually on purpose. That's a protective mechanism. There is a lot of sensory nerves in the bottom of the foot, and that's to keep people from walking around on glass and rocks and tearing up their feet. Mm-hmm. You know, so obviously when we were designed, God put a lot of thought into, hey, these people are going to tear their feet up, so let's make their feet hurt really bad if they start doing something that's dumb. And that protects us. And if you step on a piece of glass, you don't keep on walking. You jump up and get off of it so that you don't do more damage to your foot walking around like that. That's one of the bad things about diabetes, is when somebody gets severe diabetes, they have neuropathy in their feet, and they can't tell when they're doing damage to their feet, and they'll do all kinds of damage to their feet walking around, not knowing that they're walking on a rough surface or stepped on a piece of glass and cut their foot, and then they can get infections and end up with amputations. So the pain in your foot is actually a good thing.
Right. Now, sometimes you hear the term, especially in athletics, you'll hear high ankle sprain. And, boy, that seems to be a lot worse, and you see athletes out a lot longer with that. What happened then?
That's where you have this space in there. It's called, you almost get like a compartment syndrome. When you have a high ankle sprain, it pushes pressure inside the ankle in this little area between the bones and the ligaments, and you can get swelling in there, and that gets too severe, you can have a compartment syndrome, and compartment syndromes where it compresses the actual arteries and veins, and you can't get blood flow to your leg. That's a serious medical condition that has to be relieved. So, you know, there are things that in the foot and ankle and calf that can be severe, blood clot, you know. So people always say, well, when do you go to the doctor? Well, if you have severe pain or swelling, you need to go to the doctor, because that can be a sign of a blood clot. It could be a sign of a compartment syndrome. You know, particularly if you didn't have any injury and you have swelling in your leg and it hurts real bad, that's going to be a typical sign of a blood clot. If you've been on a trip, traveled somewhere, people come in and say, oh, I think I hurt my leg on my vacation. No, you got a blood clot flying back on the airplane. So, you know, you want to keep the blood pumping. I always tell people, when you fly on a plane, move your feet around, you know, pump your feet up and down once in a while, or walk to the bathroom, do something to circulate some blood so you don't get a blood clot.
Right. I tell you, that happened to me. I flew to Africa several times over the last several years over there hunting and things. And, man, one time I came back and, man, my leg was so swollen, and my ankle, my foot, everything. And that's just because I didn't get up.
Yep. So, you know, that can be a very dangerous thing. So making sure that you don't have a blood clot is a good reason to go to the doctor. If you're unable to walk or put weight on your foot, that's a good time to go see the doctor. You know, if it looks like it's infected, if it's red, warm, or it really hurts to touch, or you have a fever, or there's open wound that's got pus coming out of it, those are signs you immediately need to go to a doctor. Now, if you don't have those symptoms, let's say you step off of a curve and you twist your ankle underneath you, you know, and you want to, what you can do then is wrap it, put ice on it. You know, if you don't have any reason that you can't, take anti-inflammatories, take some type of over-the-counter anti-inflammatory like Advil or Naprosyn, and see how it responds. If it's not getting better in 3 or 4 days, then it's probably time to go see the doctor.
Right. What is it about that whole compression, boy, that really makes it feel better when you get it wrapped up pretty tight?
Yeah, what you're doing is you're keeping it from swelling too much. The swelling stretches a lot of the skin and the tissue around it, and so when something swells real bad, it causes more pain. So if you can put compression on it and ice on it, you can decrease the swelling, and that makes it feel a lot better.
Gotcha. Now, as far as ice, you know, you talk different people, some different stories. Some say as long as they're swelling, use ice, no matter how many days go by. Others say 24 to 36 hours ice, and then heat. What should we do?
I like exactly what you just said. Use it until the swelling's gone, okay? If you have significant swelling, then keep using the ice on there. And a lot of times it feels better if you alternate ice and heat. So some people do that because it feels better. But the ice is really the key. You know, if you watch a pitcher, as soon as he gets out of the game, they got his arm wrapped and they got ice on it because they're trying to preserve that elbow. You know, that's how he makes his career, with his throwing arms.
Sure.
You don't see too many pitchers in the dugout without ice and compression on their elbow after they're done pitching.
No, absolutely. Now, should that be done at, like, you know, 15, 20-minute intervals with ice? You don't want to just leave it on there for an hour, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, yeah, 15 to 20 minutes, 3 or 4 times a day is probably what you want to do if you have, like, a sprained ankle or a sprained knee. You know, if you leave it on, you know, we don't want to leave it on there so much that we get frostbite. I mean,
right.
Certainly there's a limit to how much ice you can put on there, but most people 15 minutes and then they'll take it off, and then that's usually more than adequate.
All right, you're listening to Better Health. Once again, Dr. Lewis Coates is our guest, just talking about sprains and strains and all of that kind of thing here today on the show. So now, a lot of times we'll strain something in the leg, and we've heard the term hyperextended a knee, different things. So let's take that. Sometimes you step off a step and, boy, the leg's straight and you hyperextend something. What happens there?
Hyperextending the knee, that's usually your ACL, your PCL ligaments that get torn. The ACL and PCL ligaments are the ones that keep the knee from either going forward or backwards, okay? So that keeps the knee from sliding on itself. Then you have what we call the collateral ligaments, and you have the MCL, which is the medial collateral ligament, and the LCL, which is the lateral collateral ligament. Those prevent the knee from going sideways. So you have 4 different ligaments there that all prevent a different type of motion. So when you hyperextend your knee, if it slides backwards, you probably tore the PCL. If it slides forward, you probably tore the ACL. And sometimes it'll move a little bit without completely tearing it, and you may have torn 40% of the fibers or 30% of the fibers. In that case, you don't necessarily have to have surgery, but you need to immobilize the knee for a while and then start doing some physical therapy to help strengthen the muscles around it. And that ligament, over time, will scar down and try to repair itself. And it'll fill the areas with scar tissue, which, you know, a lot of times are sufficient to get you by.
Gotcha. Now, when we talked about ligaments real quick, like let's just say back at the ankle, some people say, you know, you'll get a x-ray back and they'll say, oh, you strained some ligaments or you tore ligaments. Well, is surgery all pretty much required if ever the word torn is in there, or sometimes you let it heal itself?
If it's completely torn, then the best treatment usually is going to be surgery. If it's partially torn, then you can immobilize it and let it rest and it'll heal in. But your body has a remarkable ability to heal itself. You know, that's what makes us special. Is, you know, you can't drive down the street and your car fixes the dent while you're driving. But our body can do that, and so we don't have to completely shut it down. But if we immobilize it, so if you partially tore some ligaments in your ankle, we can put you in a walking boot for 4 weeks, and a lot of times, you know, 4 to 6 weeks' time, your body will form enough scar tissue that that ankle will heal itself. Now, if the ligament is completely torn in two pieces, then most of those are always going to require surgery to be correctly fixed. Otherwise, you'll have issues.
Absolutely. And I tell you, one of the most painful things to hurt is a hamstring, and I'm sure you've probably done that. Man, it can get all black and blue, all that. What's kind of the best treatment when you know you messed up there?
Yeah, torn hamstring is a muscle that gets stretched too far and it tears some of the muscle, and that's extremely painful, as you just said. And you know, you can pretty much tell a torn hamstring because it'll hurt in the back of the leg real bad, and a lot of times it'll turn black and blue. If you tore it enough, what that is that's blood that leaked out around the muscle because it tore enough that the muscle bled under the skin, and so then you see that black and blueness, and that's from where that muscle actually ripped. Okay. Now, for those, you know, basically you have to take it easy. You can't keep running, and you need to get some crutches and take it easy for a while and let that muscle repair itself. There's no quick fix on that type of injury. Now, sometimes if it's torn enough, they'll have to go in there surgically and stitch some of the muscle back together to get it to heal correctly. But that's that would be a very, very significant tear. Most of these will heal on their own, but it's going to be a long process, and that's what people don't like. You know, they'll come in and they'll go, this thing still hurt me. I did it 3 weeks ago. And I said, it's probably going to hurt you for another week or two. You
right.
know, it's not done healing yet. So, you know, and I always tell patients when they come in with a torn hamstring, and I say, you know, you're talking about going back to an office job. I said, you know, look at the NFL. These guys with torn hamstrings, they're out for half a season.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're out for the whole year. They never can return. And it's not because they're wimpy or they can't handle it. It's because it's significant enough of an injury that they can't just run back in there. I think there's a perception in the public that a pulled muscle is just, oh, you can, you know, take that should heal in a day and that should be fine. And that's not true.
Right. And, you know, a lot of times with these soft tissue injuries and all, you know, sometimes you say, well, should we go get an x-ray or MRI? How do you decide, you know, as the doc, you know, whether to get an x-ray? I guess we all start there, but then to move on maybe to an MRI.
Yeah, now that all depends on, you know, there's a lot of factors. And there's some guidelines we have. There's some little rules for ankles and knees. But basically, we look at, does it hurt when you touch it? Okay. Can they walk on it? Was there any trauma involved? Okay. Anytime there's trauma involved, it's a good idea to get an x-ray, okay? If they heard something pop or snap or crack when they did it, that's a good idea to get an x-ray. If it's been persistent, you know, if it's been something that's gone on, they did this 2 weeks ago and it's not getting better, then it's a good idea to get an x-ray at that time. So we have to kind of, there's not definitive rules in place for most, you know, there is for the ankle, what they call the Ottawa ankle rules. But for most of the joints, it's a judgment call. And I think that what you need to do as a patient is, you know, just make sure the doctor's aware that, hey, there was a traumatic event that caused this, and or it's not gotten better. I've tried these things at home. I've done these things. And then that's a time to get an X-ray. And if something persists, let's say you come in and twisted your knee. We took an X-ray, and we didn't see anything on the X-ray. We gave you some anti-inflammatories, wrapped it, used ice, and 2 weeks later it's not getting better, then that's the time you get the MRI, okay?
Okay.
If it's not healing like it's supposed to be healing, then there's a possibility that one of those ligaments or tendon was torn. Tendons are easier to identify than ligaments sometimes, because if a tendon is torn, something's not going to move the right direction, okay? Tendons are like pulleys, and they pull our muscle and our bones with our muscle so that it moves a certain way. So if somebody, for instance, tore a tendon in their finger will be stuck down and it won't go back up, or it's stuck up and won't go back down, mm-hmm. depending on which tendon you tore. One tendon's going to pull it down, one tendon's going to pull it up. You have a tendon on each side of each bone that allows it to move. So if a tendon's torn, it's a lot easier usually initially to identify, and the patients usually know, okay, hey, something's wrong, my finger won't go up, okay?
Right.
And, you know, it's stuck right here, and if you can't get it to move up, that's usually the sign of a torn tendon. And those need to be repaired the sooner the better, because the surgeon has to go in there and find the two ends of that tendon and tie them together. And if it's too far out from the accident, it's hard to find the tendon. And scar tissue develops around it, and you can't get it to move right. So if you have a tendon injury, you want to see a doctor as soon as possible. You don't want to wait on those. So anytime something won't move a certain direction, that's definitely a red flag to get into the doctor immediately, so we can have that evaluated and work on getting you to a surgeon.
All right. Dr. Lewis Coates is our guest. Once again, his family medical practice is located 5915 Murphy Road there in Sachse. Their number, 972-496-6937. All right, probably the biggest thing I would assume you hear in your practice is when people talk about straining something or pulling something, it's in the back. Boy, a big area there, or neck, you know, you reach for something. I've done that where I've tried to reach for something that's too far away, and then all of a sudden up around my collarbone, that muscle right there, boy, can twinge up on you a little bit. But how do we know when to call you, you know, if we just feel something in our back?
Yeah, back pain is actually one of the most common complaints that family doctors get. Over 90% of Americans will suffer some type of back pain in their life, and a high percentage of those will be significant enough that they have to at least see a doctor one time. So back pain, you're right, is an extremely common thing. Now, with the thing with back pain, some red flags you want to look for, okay? You know, fever would certainly be one of them, okay? If somebody comes in and have back pain and fever, then we worry about an infection in the spine, or meningitis if it's up in the neck. You know, that would be a very, very significant problem if you have an infection in your spine. So, if, you know, fever would be something we would immediately look for. Numbness or tingling in the legs or arms, that's a sign that there's a pinched nerve. So if somebody says, you know, I hurt my back and my right leg is numb and I can't, or they have trouble moving their right leg, okay, that can be damage to the sciatic nerve going down the leg, and that needs to be evaluated and taken care of. If they have leakage of stool or urine, if they can't hold their bladder or stool appropriately, that's a very serious issue that we call cauda equina syndrome, and that's a series of nerves. If they get pinched, that has to be fixed immediately, or it can leave you with significant long-term problems. So there's a few red flags that we look for back pain. But most back pain, it was, like you said, a pull or a strain. You know, you've been over out front to pick up the newspaper, and all of a sudden your back got tightened. And what happens with that is you have the muscles. You have this thing called the Golgi apparatus inside your muscles, and that determines the resting strength of the muscle. Our muscles never completely relax, okay? They have what we call a resting tension, and that's what their relaxation tension let's just use an arbitrary number. Let's say 0 is completely limp and 100 is where it's as tight as it'll pull. You know, most of the time they're going to sit at like 30, okay?
Right.
So they have to have tension on them or else we couldn't stand erect. We'd fall to the ground, okay? The tension is what holds us up. So even when they're totally relaxed, they still have a certain amount of tension. And there's this thing called the Golgi apparatus inside your muscle that determines that resting tension. So if you bent down to pick up the paper and you get up, sometimes that Golgi apparatus misfires, okay? And instead of it having a 30 resting tension, it may be pulling at 60, and your brain doesn't, your brain's thinking, hey, it's on relaxation mode, but I'm getting a big pain signal down there. Something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to almost reset that Golgi apparatus, and that takes time. So a lot of times we'll use muscle relaxers, and they try to make it relax past where it normally goes. And then when the muscle relaxer wears off, hopefully it doesn't go all the way back to 60. It goes to 50 and then to 40 and then back to 30 eventually over time, and we're back to where we were. And we're not feeling that tightness and pain anymore. But for some reason or another, sometimes these things get off kilter and the muscles are pulling too hard, and that's why you're having that tension.
Okay. Now, as far as in the back and neck too, I know from personal, you know, I had a fusion C6 and 7 back in 1988 there in Dallas with Dr. Ralph Reichbaum, and boy, did a great surgery on my neck. But boy, I knew, you know, there was tingling in the fingers, and different fingers will tell you kind of what different levels our problem is at, right?
That is correct. And there, you know, wherever the numbness is, we can, with some degree of accuracy, assess where we think the pinched nerve is going to be, okay? And so we will touch a lot of times when you go in with back pain, we run our fingers down your sides of your arms and outside and inside of your arm and then the inside of your wrist and outside of your wrist. And then we'll use the little two fingers and then the other three on the other side to see where is this numbness and tingling located. And we'll usually touch the left and right arm at the same spot and to ask if they feel the same, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If somebody has a pinched nerve, they'll say, well, no, the left side feels different than the right, okay? I can't feel it as much. And that gives us a clue as to where the level is. And it's not perfect science because patients don't always give us exact information, but they'll say, oh, it may, they go, I can't tell if that's different or not, or, you know, it may be a little. So, but it gives us, it usually will narrow it down to a few different levels. And then we have a good idea when we get the MRI, we kind of expect the C6, you know, C5, C6, you know, problem or whatever level we decided it was.
Right.
And it's not surprising when we see a pinched nerve there. And then you have to decide at that point, what are the treatments, okay? If we've done conservative therapy, not getting better, so usually we'll try oral steroids. If that doesn't work, the next step is you go to a specialist and they'll do a steroid injection. And mm-hmm. See if that helps. And if that doesn't help, then we have to do some type of minimally invasive procedure. You know, and if that doesn't work, then sometimes they have to open you up still. But, you know, a lot of times in today's world, we have a lot of minimally invasive spine techniques that we can use that are a lot safer than when I first got into medicine.
Sure.
And those are things that have, where technology's really come a long way. And most patients do very, very well with these minimally invasive procedures.
Right. So now a few more minutes left here, but when you do get that X-ray and figure out you've got a fracture, or how do we kind of deal with things the same way, you know, going back to the ankle, I guess. I mean, if they say, oh, you fractured your ankle, kind of still the same type of treatment there that we talked about with the sprain?
For the most part now, when you deal with a fracture, you're going to have to immobilize it, you know. And so, you know, that's where casts come into, you know, splints, casts. You know, sometimes we can still use boots, you know, depending on where the fracture is. The problem with boots is patients will take them off, okay, which is the same problem with a splint. You know, a splint would allow your wrist to heal just fine, but a lot of times we're worried about using a splint because patients will take it off, and that prolongs the process.
Okay? Yeah.
They go, well, I take it off to shower, or I take it off to do that. Well, taking it off at all is bad because it doesn't take much movement for that thing to get it to move around, and it undoes weeks and weeks worth of healing, okay? You know, so when we talk about immobilization, we don't want it to move at all, you know, and that's why ribs take so long to heal, is we can't immobilize your ribs. That's the only bones really in the body that you can't completely immobilize,
mm-hmm.
because you have to keep breathing every breath. And so, you know, I saw a patient last week with a rib fracture. He's like, how long is this going to take? And I said, it's going to take months. He's like, months? I broke my ribs no better in, you know, 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And I said, but when you broke your wrist, we put it in a cast, and you could not use your wrist for those 4 to 6 weeks. And so that allows the body to heal because it never moves, okay? And patients get annoyed with casts. They come in, they want them, you know, cut off, or they don't like them, you know, hey, get rid of this thing. And it's not time, okay? If you take off the splints, you're going to prolong the process. And so, you know, that's the good thing about fractures is once we cast them, most of them do very, very well, okay? You know, there are some fractures that don't heal as well, and that's, we know what those are. Going in, we usually tell the patient that, hey, these have poor blood supply and they typically don't heal as well. Like in the wrist, there's a scaphoid fracture. In the foot, there's a Jones fracture. Those are specific types of fractures that we know are trouble, okay? But for the most part, most of them heal just fine. And kids heal way faster than adults.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll see a kid come in with a little collie fracture, and that's the type of wrist fracture that they fall and they try to catch themselves.
Right.
And they put their wrist out, and the bone basically buckles on itself, okay? So it has like this little fold in it because the bone's not strong enough to hold their weight, and it buckles on the weight of their body. And so you'll come in, you take an x-ray, you see the collie fracture, and you put them in a cast, and in 4 weeks, they're back to normal, running around, doing their normal thing. You cut the cast off, they're fine. But some of us adults, at 4 weeks, you know, we go look at it and we go, oh, you still got to wear the cast for another week or another 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll go, well, my son, his only took 4 weeks. Well, your son's 6 years old and his bone's growing way faster than yours. But the kids do heal very, very fast.
Right. Got about 60 seconds here, but we could probably help all of ourselves out and not go through this if we just probably got up in the mornings. We knew we were going to do something a little bit. Just do some stretching, right?
Yeah, as far as the muscle pulls and ligament pulls and sprained muscles, if you stretch really good before you go out and work out or go out and mow the lawn or go to the lake, whatever things you're doing, that will definitely cut down on the injuries for sure.
All right. Well, Dr. Coates, as always, our time goes very quick here, but, man, we appreciate your time, and we'll look forward to our visit next week, sir.
All right. Thanks for having me. I'll see you next week.
All right. That was Dr. Lewis Coates. And once again, if you're just joining us, Dr. Coates' practice is in Garland, Texas. We do a show each week there in the Dallas area called Better Health, and he just shares some great information. So I wanted to share it with you, our Haystack audience. You're listening to KLZ 560. We got to take a short break, and we'll be back with more right after this.
Take AIM. Affordable Interest Mortgage has been offering the Asset Manager all-in-one loan for over 11 years. We are experienced in helping homeowners pay thousands less in interest on their mortgage, own their home faster, all without spending one dime more. 720-895-0500. Take AIM. Affordable Interest Mortgage, where we have hundreds of clients that have been using this loans to build their equity faster, access emergency funds when necessary, and pay off their home in 8 to 13 years versus 25 to 30. People initially believe this loan is too good to be true, but it is true. Call 720-895-0500 now to see if you qualify. Loans from $100,000 to $2.5 million, same rate. Ask our previous clients. They will tell you it works. Call 720-895-0500 and work with the experts. This loan has been around since 1965. Affordable Interest Mortgage, where it's all about you. 720-895-0500. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
Got a question for the station? Email info@CrawfordBroadcasting.com. Now back to Haystack Help Radio.
Welcome to Protect Your Legacy with Attorney Blake Harris. Our show is brought to you by Mile High Estate Planning. I hope you'll check out the website, MileHighEstatePlanning.com. An easy number for you to remember, 833-ASK-BLAKE. And with that, we will welcome Attorney Blake Harris. So, Blake, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Scott. Good to be back on the show and excited to help our listeners avoid some of the most common estate planning mistakes.
Absolutely. And, you know, as I was kind of going through some of these, it's like, boy, you can do a lot of things right. You may do 7 or 8 of these things right we're going to mention today, but if you leave out a couple of them, it can still be the possibility of putting you in a bind. So we're going to cover some great things today. And, you know, Blake, it's something that, as I've talked to you before, it's something that just so many people put off. And I'm telling you, over these last several months, I've had several, you know, friends pass away and very unexpectedly and at a young age, between 58 and 65. And boy, you just never know. So boy, something to really be on top of here is our estate planning. So let's just run through, and we just kind of call this our 10 most common mistakes to avoid.
Yes, yes, and you are hinting at the biggest mistake, estate planning mistake number one to avoid: putting it off. Many people delay creating an estate plan, fearing that it will be a daunting task to put together an estate plan. However, if you work with a professional, that professional is going to be able to guide you through the process and spoon feed you a little bit at a time until you put your estate plan together. Once you have the estate plan together, then you get to have the peace of mind going forward. It no longer hangs over your head. You no longer have to worry about what would happen in the event of your incapacity or passing away. So the biggest and most important thing you can do, give us a call. Get scheduled for your free initial consultation. Stop putting it off, and you can avoid the biggest estate planning mistake.
Absolutely. All right, Blake, I'm just going to let you go through these. And, you know, I love how you just really can go into detail on each one because, again, this makes us think about things. And the one I think we're going to touch on next is doing it yourself. And that's what I tell people all the time. Matter of fact, a gentleman I was just at on our show recently, I told to call you because I said, you know, are you thinking about leaving money to your kids? Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. I go, well, don't do that. You call Blake and he'll tell you why. We'll touch on that in a minute. But, you know, so just doing it yourself because, I mean, hey, there's not one just book that you pull out when a client walks in and go, this is what you need to do because this is what all my clients do. Everybody's situation and family situation is different.
Yes, absolutely. And customized estate planning is very hard or impossible to find with the do-it-yourself options. And nowadays, there are lots of options for do-it-yourself when it comes to everything, including estate planning. However, I can tell you I've spoken with far too many families that have had to spend thousands or tens of thousands of dollars to clean up a mess that their parents created, which could have easily been avoided had the parents just sought the proper legal guidance. I often like to tell the story of a client I had a few years ago whose mother just tried to draw up a real simple will on her own. That got contested, and the daughter had to spend months in court and tens of thousands of dollars arguing with other family members to get her inheritance. All of this could have easily been avoided had her parents just taken the time to speak with a professional. When it comes to estate planning, it is well worth the time to speak with a professional who creates and administers estate plans every single day. Avoid mistake number two with the do-it-yourself forms and speak with a professional when it comes time to create your estate plan.
Absolutely. And, you know, one part of that I know is on our notes, and, boy, I talk to people all this with our referrals for seniors program. Many times it takes a lot to plan for long-term care planning, and maybe someone has to go into an assisted living home or nursing home, whatever the case may be. And there's a lot of things to look at before you just start selling off property or transferring ownership of things, isn't there?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, if you're looking for a simple will or a revocable trust, I certainly recommend work with a professional. But when it comes to planning for long-term care costs, I don't know that there's any do-it-yourself options out there that even attempt to accomplish what a professional, what an attorney can do in terms of reducing nursing home costs. And we've spoken about this before on your show. The average cost for 1 month stay in a nursing home is right around $8,000 per month. Many estates will see their family's assets dwindle. Others will see their family's estate completely wiped out because of the rising cost of long-term care. So by working with a professional, not only will they help you get your basic will, your incapacity documents, your financial and medical power of attorney, your revocable trust for avoiding probate done, but they can also help you with more complex issues such as paying for nursing home costs and preserving family assets.
Absolutely. Once again, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Protect Your Legacy, brought to you by Mile High Estate Planning. As I mentioned, check out their website. And one thing I really want you to pay attention to is the reviews. And you can go through and see all the different reviews that some of Blake's clients have left. And you will understand why we are thrilled to have Blake as our exclusive estate planning attorney here for Haystack Help. And I promise you, he will make the process very easy for you and simple. But you got to make the first call, and that's 833-ASK-BLAKE. And, Blake, I mentioned your name, Mile High Estate Planning and milehighestateplanning.com. That tells us real easy, as you just mentioned a few minutes ago, that's all you do. So it can be a mistake choosing maybe just someone that's got an attorney tag to their name, and this is not really what they do.
And you're spot on, which brings us to estate planning tip number 3 to avoid, which is choosing the wrong professional. There are lots of attorneys who will draft up a will. However, when it comes time to create your estate plan, you want to work with somebody who specializes in wills. If they also do divorces and car accidents and maybe will sell you a piece of real estate too on the side, you're probably not going to get the same level of quality that you'd receive by working with someone who works exclusively in the estate planning field. And I'll take a quick moment to plug my law firm. We are 100% estate planning focused. Myself and my team of attorneys, the only type of work that we have, that we do, and the only type of work that I've done over the course of my career, pretty much the only type of work I've done over the course of my career, has been estate planning focused. There's so much that goes into creating an estate plan, so much that goes into understanding the laws regarding probate and asset protection, that it's very hard or nearly impossible for somebody to keep up with multiple different practice areas. So when you choose a professional, you want to make sure that you have a reputable person, someone who has good reviews from past clients, and somebody who focuses right in the estate planning world. Once you get the right estate planning attorney, once you get the right estate planning law firm, the rest of the mistakes, you're probably going to have a pretty good job. You're going to probably be pretty successful at avoiding. It's one of the more important decisions that you're going to make when it comes to creating an estate plan. It's who to work with. And if you get that portion right, the rest of the estate plan, the rest of your family's future pretty much falls into place on its own. So certainly you want to work with the right professional, someone who focuses in estate planning and someone who other clients have spoken well of, someone who's an expert in their field, will save your family a lot of time, money, and energy in the long run.
And Blake, you know, I could be wrong. I don't know every firm in Colorado, certainly, but you're the only one that I know of that just – that's your name, you know, estate planning in your name.
Yes, there are other firms which will claim to only have done estate planning, but over time they may have actually changed the practice area of their name. Since I founded the firm many years ago, we've always had the same Mile High Estate Planning. And to the best of my knowledge, there's no other law firm that actually puts estate planning in the name of the firm like we do. We're committed to doing just one type of law and doing it right.
Absolutely. All right, we'll move on. And again, folks, these aren't in any certain order. They are all equally important. And, Blake, one of the things I mentioned, losing some dear friends here lately, one was a stepbrother, 63 years old. I talked to him just a few weeks before his passing, and he was fine and could talk. And, boy, his mental capacity seemed great. And all of a sudden, cancer moved into his brain, and in about 10 days, there was no more communication, and that is not something anyone thought was going to happen. So one of our big deals here is not planning for our incapacitation, right?
Yes, yes. So when people think of estate planning, they usually think of what happens to their money after they pass away. But estate planning is any time that you are not in control of your property yourself. So not only does it include after you pass away, it also includes planning for your incapacity. The majority of us will be incapacitated at some point in our life. You are actually 10 times more likely to be incapacitated in the next year than you are to pass away. This is why anytime my firm creates an estate plan for one of our clients, we include a complete set of incapacity documents. I'm going to run you through the four main estate planning documents which everyone should have. The first one is a financial power of attorney. A financial power of attorney will allow the individual you have selected to make a financial decision on your behalf in the event that you become incapacitated. The remaining documents are all related to your health care. The first is a medical power of attorney for selecting an agent to make a medical decision on your behalf in the event that you become incapacitated, followed by a HIPAA release. HIPAA is a federal law which protects the privacy of your health care. In the event that you become incapacitated, you want your agent to be able to access that protected health care information and share it with other doctors so that the doctors can make informed medical decisions. That can be accomplished through a HIPAA release. And then finally, a living will. A living will says that if an individual is in a permanent vegetative state with no hopes of recovery, that they do want to have life support removed, they don't want to be kept indefinitely on a breathing tube or a feeding tube. So it's a financial power of attorney, medical power of attorney, HIPAA authorization, and living will are all the incapacity documents which you want to make sure that you don't overlook when it comes time to create your estate plan.
So, Blake, so many times people think that, you know, hey, I'm married, my wife can handle this, my husband can handle this, my kids are older, so I can certainly make decisions for them. But if someone in your family is involved, let's just say in an automobile accident, and you get a call from, you know, an emergency room, and you say they're there, and you say, well, how they're doing, they legally probably can't tell you, can they?
That is correct. Colorado does not give anybody the ability to act on the behalf of another adult, another individual that's age 18 or older, unless either they have a financial or medical power of attorney in place, or they go through an expensive and time-consuming guardianship or conservatorship process. A guardianship or conservatorship is going to cost thousands or tens of thousands of dollars and take many months to get an individual appointed on your behalf. A power of attorney documents are relatively simple and inexpensive to set up. It's probably the best bang for your buck you get in terms of the estate planning world by creating a power of attorney documents and avoiding the needs for guardianships and conservatorships in the event of incapacitation.
All right, good deal. Once again, if you're just getting in the car, turn on the radio. Blake Harris is our guest, and it's Protect Your Legacy, milehighestateplanning.com, 833-ASK-BLAKE. And Blake, you mentioned free consultation, and you can do that, of course, face-to-face, in person there at your beautiful office downtown, which, by the way, offers free convenient parking, or now in what we've been finding ourselves in, a lot of people doing it online. So kind of explain your options there.
Yes, exactly. So we always offer a free initial consultation for anyone interested in setting up an estate plan. If you decide to work with us, great. We can discuss the process of moving forward. But even if you decide not to work with us, still giving our office a call, we will be able to give you some valuable information, some guidance that will help you, direct you in the right direction, and put you in a better place than you were before you contacted our law firm. It's always a free initial consultation. We're more than happy to simply start with a phone call, or we can do it over a Zoom or FaceTime call, or we can do it in our office. As you mentioned, we have a beautiful office space in downtown Denver next to Union Station with free parking right next door.
All right, good deal. Now, I mentioned earlier a little bit about, you know, long-term care cost, and you mentioned the $8,000, and boy, if someone has to go to a facility that requires a lot of medical attention, that could easily double. So we have got to plan for long-term care costs, but how do people do that at the age of maybe 55 or 60 when they're thinking about finally doing this?
Sure. So one option is buying long-term care insurance. I don't sell any long-term care insurance, and if you can't afford it, then it may be a good investment. I don't recommend it one way or the other. I'm not in the business of recommending investments, but I do mention to clients that that is an option to pay for their long-term care. Another option is to create a Medicaid Asset Protection Trust. With a Medicaid Asset Protection Trust, an individual can create a trust. They will transfer their assets into their trust, so their home will be owned by the trust. And then provided they can wait 5 years or close to 5 years before entering into a nursing home, the assets that are inside of that trust are not considered an eligible resource by the government, and therefore the government will pay for the individual or the couple's long-term care. And then once that couple passes away, those assets will pass down to their children and their grandchildren, as opposed to being recovered by the state, which happens with a lot of families who make the next biggest estate planning mistake, which is not planning for their long-term care, mm-hmm. and have the family home recovered by a state agency. So mistake number five is not planning for your long-term care. When it comes time to create an estate plan, if you're over the age of 50, over the age of six, you're getting close to your 70s, I would consider or at least discuss creating a Medicaid asset protection trust for preserving your assets from the rising cost of long-term care.
Absolutely. And that brings our next point. And, you know, this is really something that I've known several people that have fallen into this mistake as well, and that's not planning for disabled children or grandchildren.
Correct. So if you have a child or grandchild with autism or some other disability, it is imperative that you create an estate plan, and that estate plan includes a special needs trust. Without a special needs trust, an individual who's receiving government benefits is going to have to spend their entire inheritance down. So if you leave them $300,000, they're going to have to spend all that money themselves on their own care until just about $2,000 remains. And then at that point, once they are impoverished in the eyes of the government, then the government will step in and continue to pay for their long-term and continue to pay for their medical care and give them benefits. Instead, create a special needs trust or have your revocable living trust include special needs provisions so that a beneficiary who's receiving government benefits can continue to receive government benefits and keep their inheritance. It makes all the difference in the world to a beneficiary, child, grandchild, that is disabled by having a special needs trust. And I create a special needs trust or a standby special needs trust for nearly all of my clients, regardless of whether they have any family members who may have a disability, because you never know which future family member may develop a disability. By having a standby special needs trust, you are doing a lot to preserve your family's assets for future generations.
Right. And then, Blake, what happens if, you know, someone comes in, they do a plan with you, some event in their life changes or they need to update and all? Kind of explain how that will work.
Sure. So our firm, for our planning services, we do everything on a flat fee basis, so the clients know exactly what they are getting into before they begin the process. Nobody is ever surprised with a bill later on down the road. It's the big part of the reason I believe that we have so many 5-star reviews on Google, mm-hmm. and so many happy clients. As far as updates are concerned, if a client needs to change their trust more than 30 days after they've created their estate plan, they have 30 days to make it, changes no charge, but more than 30 days after they've created their estate plan, if they need to make any changes, then we generally charge just a fraction of the fee that we charge them initially, perhaps a couple $100, to make an amendment to the plan. However, we give all of our clients free lifetime reviews, which means that if 6 months or 10 years after a client creates an estate plan with our firm and they have a question about their estate plan, there's a change in their family circumstances, a marriage, a divorce, a birth, a death, somebody receives a large inheritance, or there's a lawsuit, or somebody loses capacity or needs to move into a nursing home, we always give our clients free lifetime reviews. We want to have our clients communicating with us so that as their circumstances change, as their life changes, their estate plan stays in line with their goals.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk about now something. Again, when you first say this, I'm sure everyone listening says, what? I thought that was our goal, to leave all our money to our kids. But let's talk about choosing outright distribution to heirs.
So this is a mistake that I see some of the most reputable law firms in Colorado make, and it's giving outright distributions to children. Certainly not before children are 18 should they receive a large inheritance. And even before the age of 25 or 30, most practitioners, most law firms will advise parents to hold that money in trust until the children have some time to get through school, get settled with their family, maybe start a business. However, the mistake that a lot of very reputable law firms will make is at age 30, they'll say, okay, this child is mature enough, let's just dump all these funds into their bank account. If you do that, and then the next day, after your child receives their inheritance on their 30th birthday, the next day, their spouse files for divorce, a lot of the money that you have worked so hard for over the course of your life could be lost. So instead of giving money outright to children, what I recommend is once the children reach an age where we are comfortable with them managing their own inheritance, let them choose their trustee. They can choose their best friend as a trustee. They can go hire an attorney of their choice as their trustee. And then they can request a distribution, get a distribution anytime that they wish. However, nobody's going to force the money away from them. Our goal is to make that money last as long as possible and to be there for the benefit of our children and grandchildren as long as possible. And we can do that by avoiding estate planning mistake number 7, which is giving outright distributions to heirs.
All right. And you mentioned, you know, you do that and boy, they may have a lawsuit or something that can cover a lot of different areas from auto accidents to business lawsuits, things like that. So how can you really protect yourself from lawsuits?
So that brings us to estate planning mistake number 8, which is not protecting yourself from lawsuits. We as Americans live in one of the world's most litigious society. There are thousands of lawsuits filed every single day, over 10 million lawsuits filed every single year, and billions of dollars paid out in judgment every few days. When it comes time to create your estate plan, consider also setting up an asset protection trust or some other corporation for the purpose of making it hard for creditors to access your assets. So in addition to a revocable living trust, I often recommend clients who are at high risk for a lawsuit, whether it's because they are a business owner, a professional such as a doctor, attorney, architect, accountant, or they own a bit of real estate, or they just have several million dollars in assets, which would be a juicy target for a plaintiff attorney to go after, to also engage in some form of asset protection planning. And now is when I'm going to take a moment to mention, if you're interested in learning more about asset protection planning, by all means, give my office a call. We'd be happy to get on a call with you to discuss strategies to protect your assets, or go online to my website, milehighestateplanning.com, and download a free copy of my book, The Ultimate Guide to Estate Planning and Asset Protection, and you can educate yourself more on tools, tips, and tricks for keeping your assets safe from creditors. So when it comes time to create an estate plan, avoid estate planning mistake number 8, not protecting yourself from lawsuits.
All right, that's great. And once again, if you'll go to his website, MileHighEstatePlanning.com, download that book, Ultimate Guide to Estate Planning Asset Protection. I promise you that will be a wealth of information for you. All right, 4 or 5 minutes left here, just enough time to cover these last two, but we've talked a lot about trust, so it's got to be a mistake if you don't fund the trust.
Yes. Mistake number 9, not funding your trust. Once a trust is created, you need to transfer your property into that trust in order for it to stay out of probate. When you hire an attorney, when you hire a law firm, make sure that they offer funding as part of the process. If you purchase a trust and you have not transferred your assets into that trust, you are going to miss out on being able to avoid probate, which is one of the biggest benefits of creating a trust. Probate is a government process for distributing assets after an individual passes away. Assets held in your name personally will go through probate. Assets that have been funded, transferred into a trust, will stay outside of probate, and your family will not need to pay the additional costs, taxes, and fees that are associated with going through probate. So avoid estate planning mistake number 9, which you can do by funding your trust and hiring an attorney, hiring a law firm that includes funding as part of an estate planning package.
All right, which brings us to our last thing we want to help you with, and our last tip here. Blake, you've got to keep the estate plan updated.
Exactly. Estate planning, mistake number 10, not updating your estate plan. If you have already created an estate plan, but it has been many years since you reviewed that estate plan, or there have been changes in your family circumstances, a marriage, a divorce, a birth, a death, an inheritance, all the factors I mentioned just a few moments ago, then you certainly want to update your estate plan. If you just moved to Colorado, if you've changed states, you should definitely look into updating your estate plan. In some circumstances, an out-of-date estate plan can be worse than having no estate plan at all. Wow. By working with a firm that offers reviews that will review your estate plan from time to time, you know that you're going to avoid this mistake, that your estate plan will stay up to date with your goals and your objectives.
Absolutely. And Blake, I know you've said this a lot of times, you know, estate planning is all about family and money. So whenever either of those things change, we need to give you a call, correct?
Yes, absolutely. If there's a change in your financial situation, or a change within your family, it's time to think about your estate plan. An estate plan can do two things for you. Yes, it can help save you money. It can save your nursing home costs. It can help you avoid a lawsuit. It can help you avoid costly guardianships, conservatorships, probate proceedings. But it can also do a lot to preserve family harmony, which to me is really the most value that you get in creating an estate plan. By having a well-drafted, well-thought-out estate plan, you can reduce the chance that there's conflict within your family after you pass away. And a lot of families think that there won't be any conflict and that you may not need to really engage in much estate planning, but you never know when conflict is going to arise. Sometimes when we think we've got a case that's certainly going to have conflict, conflict never arises. Other cases which we imagine are going to go down very smoothly, big conflicts can arise. Right. By having a well-drafted estate plan, you can save your family harmony and you can preserve your family assets.
Well, Blake, as always, man, we are thrilled to have you here on our show, and actually your show, I guess I should say, but it is just thrilled. I'm thrilled to work with you and to go through all these things to help our listeners. So we appreciate your time very much. And I hope you'll give Blake a call, 833-ASK-BLAKE, milehighestateplanning.com. Call for that free consult today. And maybe you've got a plan. You just want to get a second opinion. Blake, about 30 seconds, but kind of explain how that would work.
Sure. So we always start with the free initial consultation. And some clients come to us and they don't have any plan in place whatsoever. Other clients currently have a plan. If you currently have a plan, we're happy to review that as part of the free consultation, give our recommendations. In some cases, we'll tell our clients you're right where you need to be and nothing needs to be changed. In other cases, we can just suggest a minor update, perhaps transferring a piece of real estate to fund the trust. Or in some cases, we'll tell clients you really need to start from scratch, and we can help with that as well. So wherever you are in the estate planning process, we can make sure that you are fully up to speed, that you have a fully comprehensive, up-to-date, well-drafted estate plan.
All right. Well, Blake, thank you so much for your time today, and we'll look forward to our next visit, sir.
Scott, always a pleasure. Look forward to being on the show again soon.
All right. Thank you so much. Again, Blake Harris, you've been listening to Protect Your Legacy, milehighestateplanning.com, 833-ASK-BLAKE. Hope everyone has a great day. Leave it right here on KLZ 560.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.